What's going on? It is Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where both legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had the amazing opportunity to hang out with Dean Lewis over Zoom video. Dean talks about where he grew up and how he got into music. His dad is a guitar player and had a bunch of guitars around the home growing up and would be like, oh, this is yours, Dean, when you get older, and to his brothers. And so he was always around guitars. It wasn't until 18, though, when he really started to become kind of obsessed with playing guitar and writing songs. He talked about writing his first song and showing it to his mom. He tells us a story about how he got his first manager. This is before Waves came out or before Be All Right came out. He told us the story of writing Be All Right and also writing Waves, the success of those songs, and all about the recent success of his latest single from his new album. The album's called The Hardest Love, but this song is super emotional. The TikTok video that went viral is incredibly emotional. He wrote the song about his father and finding out that his father had cancer. It's called How Do I Say Goodbye? And the viral TikTok video is his brother filming his dad hearing the song for the first time. And it's just, it's an incredible song, super emotional, super vulnerable. But we talk about that video, and we also talk about another video he has up on his Instagram of his dad playing with him on stage to that song. So he brought his dad out on stage. No one knew about this. He brought his dad out on stage and they played How Do I Say Goodbye live. And once again, it's another emotional video, but we had a great conversation with Dean. You can watch the video. It's up now on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. It'd be amazing if you subscribe to our channel, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're listening to this on Spotify, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, it would be amazing if you follow us there as well and hook us up with a 5-star review.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Dean Lewis. Hey, Dean, how are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
Of course. I'm a big fan. I appreciate your time today. I'm Adam, and this is a podcast about you and your journey in music.
Great, man. Thank you very much.
Awesome. And I love the TikTok video is so, it hits deep for me. My father-in-law, my wife's dad, was diagnosed with cancer a couple years ago, and he's been in remission since. So just seeing that.
Oh,
video,
wow. Great.
Like, yeah.
Well, happy to hear he's in remission, just like my dad. Yeah. Super happy to hear he's in remission.
Okay. I was going to ask you, I did see the video that you got to play the song with him on stage, and I want to talk to you about that because that was like emotional to watch too, man.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about it now? Are we on?
Yeah. We're going. So.
Okay, sweet. I love it. Oh, I love it. Okay, cool. Yeah. So basically, you know, obviously wrote the song about my dad, and then I was in Sydney, and I was like, because my dad taught me how to play guitar. You know, he's not great at guitar, but he's a chord player like me. You know, we're both kind of similar. And so I was like, do you want to come on stage and play with me? And he said no, and then he said yes. And then we came on stage, and he wasn't nervous at all, and he had a great time. And the fans, no one knew he was going to be there, and we filmed it. So it was just a really special moment.
That's so special. And that's amazing. Yeah, really you're cool. Able to capture that and everything. I did see just in the caption of that video, you talk about how it was your dad's dream to play with you on stage even before he taught you how to play guitar, even before you even got a guitar. Was with your first instrument, was guitar your first instrument? Did he, you know, kind of put you towards that?
Yeah. So my dad, sorry, I haven't talked about this a lot, but my dad, he's always played guitar and he loved the Beatles. And so he had all these guitars when we were really young, like, you know, like under 10, and he would like, you know, he'd bring out these guitars and he'd be like to one of my brothers, this is going to be yours one day. This is going to be yours, you know, and my older brother is going to be yours. And I always want to look at these guitars, and it always had this magical quality about them. Cause he had these kind of rare electric guitars. And then he got me guitar lessons, but it was kind of like, you know, when you sort of get forced into something, and he kind of forced me into guitar lessons. I just like to look at it. I didn't want to actually do any work, you know, as a kid. So I got guitar lessons and I learned the basics, but you know, I never wanted to do it. And I just was like, whatever, but I'm glad he did. But, and then I think I was 18 I turned 18 and I said to Dad, oh, like, okay, can you get me a guitar for my birthday? Because as every musician, I mean, probably not everyone, but I'd say most, you have that moment where you go, no, I decide to do this. Because it's got to be you. It can't be someone putting it on you.
Sure.
And then he got me a guitar and I started writing songs really quickly. And yeah, that's how it happened. But I was, yeah, really just guitar. I mean, even the way that I play piano now, it's kind of embarrassing. Like, I am all about simplicity. So I use, even with guitar, like I use a capo. I never wanted to actually learn any bar chords or anything. I wanted to keep it simple. So I learned the basics and use a capo. And when I play keyboard on stage, I actually transpose. So I keep the chord shapes all really similar. But that goes back to a philosophy on simplicity and not really knowing what I'm doing, but knowing how to do it if, you know, knowing how to do it if I need to. But that's another story.
Wow. Okay. So you didn't even start really playing or writing songs until you were 18 years old?
I started late, yeah. But I was obsessed. Wow. So I was, when I was younger, like, I mean, even in my teens, I would watch YouTube. Like, I was obsessed with watching Oasis. Like, I mean, every day I'd come home from school and I'd watch Noel play acoustic guitar and I'd watch, like, the Kooks. I think it was the Kooks were playing, a big English band.
Oh, yeah. I
knew all the B-sides. I watched every performance over and over again. And I was excited. It was like I was learning these melodies and I was learning it and taking it in. But I didn't really pick up a guitar until a few years later when I was 18. When I really was like, oh, maybe I can give this a crack. So, I wasn't really, I started a little bit later than most, I'd think, but I'd had the history of learning how to play and I'd had the years of just melodies and being so obsessed with watching that it was sort of in my brain a little bit, I think.
I think it's fascinating. You were kind of watching Noel, right? I mean, he's the songwriter and the guitar player, but instead of being kind of fixated on what Liam's doing as like the frontman guy, it was like, you're kind of, you were kind of watching what the guy that wrote the songs and the melodies was doing.
Exactly. I mean, I what I loved with Noel, and that's the obviously who I used to watch, was he basically played the same chords. He just sussed the chords or whatever, and he just like moved one finger. And I was like, you know, it was so simple. And he would even do multiple songs that had the exact same chords. And I was like, my actual thought back then when I started playing properly, I was like, okay, if one human can write 100 songs that are incredible. Mm-hmm. Well, I can write one of them as good as his worst one. Like that was where I was, my starting point. I was like, there's no way like Oasis's worst song, I can't write a song as good as like the worst. Like if I really applied myself. So it was kind of just like, that was my mentality at the start. And I've been big in this. When I write songs, even to this day, like if I write a song, sometimes I'll pick up my guitar and I'll play it on acoustic guitar. And then I'll play a James Bay song or like a Frey song or something like that, or even, you know, Ed Sheeran or whoever the songwriter is. And I'll be like, and you know straight away, because you strip away all the production, or, you know, they're using fancy producers. And but if you play it and you record it on a voice memo, and I listen back and I'd be like, all right, well, side by side, these sound like they're pretty much similar quality. And that's been a real thing that I do, because when you're a new singer-songwriter and you play a song on guitar and then you listen to like a fully produced guy who writes hits or like the Frey or Ed Sheeran, it's disheartening and you kind of go, oh, I'm not as good. But if you play it on guitar next to each other, side by side, you, and they sound about the same, well, then it's possible. And I always thought this, I was like, well, if he can make it sound like that and it sounds like this when I play it on guitar, well, then when I play mine on guitar, I can make it sound as good as that. And then for me, it was a big, I've always thought that. So when I would go to producers, I would go in and it wouldn't be as good. And I'd be like, well, then I just do it again. And I've done this throughout my whole career. I was like, if it's not as good, you know, sometimes songs just aren't as good, but sometimes it's just the production. And, you know, it's like, it can be as good.
I mean, that's a really interesting philosophy. I've never heard anyone talk about it like that, but you're right, right? I mean, if you strip back all of the production and all the things and the bells and the whistles, and it's just the guitar and the voice, and you set yours next to it, if they could be equivalent, even if you're a young singer-songwriter. It's like, well, this has some legs. Let's, you know, keep running with this.
Exactly. You need that. You need that at the start because you can, it's so disheartening to hear what great people do. And also the first producers most artists work with at the start, the level's not there. You know what I mean? And you also don't know who you are, but I think it's a really good, calibration. Do you know what I mean? Of when you do that on the guitar and yeah, it's a good calibration.
Mm-hmm. When you started writing or when you started playing at 18, was the, like, what kind of spark that do you remember? Like what were you thinking you were going to be doing prior to that? Like, did you have an idea of doing something totally different than music?
It's funny. Yeah. Yeah. I think I don't really take it that seriously. I was just obsessed with it. I just kind of hit, you get to that natural point where you watch so much that you go, oh, I may as well just try this, you know? And I'd already learned, you know, like the basics when I was like 12 and then, you know, obviously with a few years, it was probably a little bit to be good at something. Like, you know, I think every person in the world, you want to be good at something and you want to be great and you want to prove that you have a voice. So I was like, all right, well, I picked up a guitar at 18 and the first song I wrote, I remember I showed my mom and my mom was like, she was like, oh, that's good, darling. But I knew it was like, actually it wasn't horrible. And I was like, oh, it came really easily. And then, you know, when you do something and you're good at something right away, you got that little spark.
Mm-hmm.
And not great. But you know, some people pick up a ball and they just are really good at basketball or they're really good at math. Like maybe some people, they just have a little 10% spark at it. That's better than most people. And it was easy when I started doing it. It just came really easily and naturally. And then that's exciting because I'm good at something and I'm like, oh, then I can progress. And really songwriting is, I mean, it's really, at the start, it's kind of simple because the whole world's your oyster and you have all this, these masters have laid out how to write songs and the chords are all the same, basically, you know, like usually it's four chords in different, you know, like 80% of songs like that in different, progressions. Mm-hmm. And it's like, everything seems really possible. And it's not like writing a book where you have to write, like a song is almost like a page from a book. Like that's, it's kind of like you can, and you can also get away with saying really things that don't really mean anything. I mean, you can do that. Not that I try to make everything great and I really think about what I'm doing, but you know, sometimes when the first songs I ever wrote, you know, some of them are like, I didn't really know what I was doing. And the line was sort of didn't really make any sense, but like you play it at a show and everyone's singing it back to you. And some people are crying and you realize people are interpreting it in different ways. And so it's, yeah. And there's levels to that. Like obviously after a certain amount of time, you realize how important lyrics are and how difficult it is and how lucky you are sometimes to strike gold. But when you start, you're so like naive to everything. And there's so much greatness gets created from that naivety, I think.
Mm-hmm. With that, like, I mean, writing that song and showing it to your mom, like kind of knowing like, you know, I'm good at this. Like you said, I'm 10% better at this than most people that would just start off. Right. Like at what point are you, you know, you said you're obsessed with this. So you write the song and then is it like, how do you kind of start from that point? Is it like, do you start showing your friends your songs or you're like, oh, I'm just gonna throw it up on YouTube or like where does it all kind of begin?
Oh my God. Yeah. So I would send my brother, Sean has always been like my best, like, person to show stuff to. Like, so I would always show him the songs and he's always so encouraging. He was always like, this is great. And this is my brother. Like we would tear into each other and we're so competitive, but he was always like, you're really good at this. And over time I would start sending it to like girls that I was talking to and the songs were pretty awful, but like there was a bit of spark there and no one really cared that much. Like, but then over time, you just start getting better and better. And what I did was I paid like 10 grand of my own money. Like I saved up 10 grand and I worked with a producer in Australia. And most of the stuff was really bad because when you first start out, you're either copying because when you start anything, you're just copying, right? That's how you get good at something. You have to learn from the masters before you know, and so you're doing that and then and you don't really know what works. You don't have your own voice yet. I didn't understand my voice. I didn't really know how to use it. I didn't understand emotion, my range, you know, and you're all simulating sort of different. I was sort of emulating Luke from the Kooks where he had this kind of like, I'm not saying it was your fault. Like kind of, it was kind of embarrassing, but I worked with this producer and I did a bunch of songs and then I did one song that was like pretty good. And I listened back to it and the producer said, this song's going to open doors for you. And I knew out of all these songs, I recorded like five, there was one good one in there. And I remember the moment that it all changed for me. Actually, I went in to do an open mic night in Australia. It was I didn't really start doing any gigs. I started doing open mic nights, just my guitar at a pub. Mm-hmm. And I went in there and I played, like there was like 10 people, like, you know, you wait for your turn. And I went in there and I played that song that the producer said was the one that was going to open doors. And it was my best song at the time. And I played it and everyone went quiet. And the girl who was serving at the bar stopped serving and turned around and watched. And I was like, no one did that for anyone else. I was like, that's interesting. And I'm shaking up there. Like I'm nervous as hell. This is a terrifying experience to show your art and stuff like that. And so that kind of encouraged me. And then I sent a demo out. I sent that song out with a bunch of demos to 30 managers. And I think no one got back to me. One person got back to me and said, do you have any more music? And I didn't. So I just didn't reply. And that was the end of that. And then I thought, all right, well, look, I'm a probabilities guy. I was like, I sent my best work out to these managers. No one replied apart from one who I had nothing. I was like, it was like, there's no future in this. So I kind of was like, you know, maybe I'll just do it as a hobby. And I put mm-hmm. that song online. I think it got like 30,000 views on YouTube and wow. like did nothing. It was just like, you know, I ended up deleting that song.
I was going to ask you, that song's not, it didn't make a record or anything.
Yeah, because it was very like, it's a bit cheesy. Like, you know, because I wouldn't even put in my cat. It's not even in the ballpark of even close. But back then, okay. your best song is, you know, it'll become nothing in time because I learned so much between now and then.
Sure.
But what actually happened was my best mate, it sounds like a lie. This story is so crazy. But my best mate, who works in radio, was on a boat cruise and passed that song on to my now manager. And she heard the song back then. She was drunk on a boat, she told me. And she was on the taxi home and she was listening to that song. And she was like, oh my God. And she had this publishing company. So publishing, people are like, you know, people here know you start as, you can be an artist or you can sign publishing to be a songwriter. Mm-hmm. Essentially, I mean, it's more complicated than that. But she signed me as a songwriter to write songs for other people for $0. It was, my lawyer said it was like the worst deal ever. But I was like 20... At this point, I was 26. Like, it was a long time. You know, I was working a normal job and I thought I'd missed it. I was like, you know, so I thought, okay, I'm going to give them a percentage of my songs for $0. But in my head, I knew it was the best deal I was ever going to do because I trusted her. They were good people and they'd had a big track record. And so I gave up a lot of stuff for nothing. And it ended up being the best choice I'd ever made because through them, they, you know, she managed me, got me record deals. She, you know, all these things started falling into place because of that. And it is important. I think it's less important now because what, you know, it's a different world with TikTok. I mean, with labels and all that stuff, it's a very mm-hmm. complicated discussion. But, you know, if you wanted to get into that label world, you do sort of need that. You need someone to vouch for you kind of thing. If you don't have that hype, mm-hmm. you need someone to go, oh, I believe in you. And that's rarer and rarer nowadays. But yeah, she was the person who believed in me. And then, and then I went to the UK and wrote Waves, and that's the start of that kind of stuff happening.
Okay, so you were able to obtain the manager prior to Waves even being a thing. Wow.
Yeah, I got the manager and publishing, yeah.
That's interesting. That's cool. I come from radio. I did radio for 17 years, so that's awesome that your best friend did radio too. I think that's cool.
Yeah, he still does it. He's a legend. He was trying to pass my songs on to the music director there back then, but they weren't. He didn't tell me that they didn't like it, but then, you know, things worked out.
Well, there's so much red tape when it comes to it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, there is. There really is.
But that's cool though. So then you get this deal. Then you go. You said you went to the UK, and that's when you wrote Waves. That was one of the songs.
So I wrote,
and then obviously that one becomes a massive hit.
Became huge. You know, it was weird. I wrote Waves. I'd already written Be Alright, actually.
Oh wow.
So this is weird. I'd already written Be Alright. Excuse me, but I was kind of on this weird run about like being a writer. I was like, oh, I'm gonna write for other people. I wanna do this. And then like I wrote one of the best songs I've ever written, and then I gave it to like with an artist, co-wrote it with them, and then their mother didn't like it and it didn't get released. And I was like, okay, screw this. Like I'm not leaving like the, you know, you give everything and then, you know, it doesn't, you know, some weird reason can be the reason it doesn't come out. I wanted more control of what I was doing.
Right. So, was his mom run a major label or something?
Yeah. Exactly. No, it was just, you know, opinions kill art, right? You know, it's crazy. So I'd written Be Alright, and but it was kind of like on the side. And then I went to the UK and I wrote Waves, And then when I got back from UK, I started showcasing for these record labels. Like I was playing for, I played for like every major label in Australia. And it was hard for me to even get a showcase. Like I was playing Waves. I was playing my song Half a Man. I was playing Be Alright. And they'd be in there and they'd kind of be like, oh, that's great. And they'd be like, we don't really have a place for you. Like it just, no, for whatever reason, they didn't want to sign me. And I was like, okay, well, I swear these songs are good. And then the last label, the very last major in Australia, signed me. They basically were like, one A&R guy there called Mike Taylor, who was a legend. He heard the song Be Alright. And he goes, I wasn't going to sign anyone this year until they had the song. And I believe you had the song. And so he signed me. And then I went to America. We got signed. Cause when you're in Australia, it's really hard to get out of this little bubble. Like it's, there's a few Australian artists that have done well, right? Like Five Sauce and like Sia, but it's really rare. Vance Joy's done great, but it's so small and so hard to do. But I immediately went overseas to try to like pick up the labels in America, and then we put Waves out, and then it like did nothing for the first 2 months. Like I was like, I think it was 5,000 views on YouTube. It was like,
wow.
I remember being like, oh man, you know, this isn't my best. I thought it was my best song. I knew I had Be Alright, but Be Alright wasn't done yet. It was in the wrong key, that it was a demo and I hadn't figured out my voice yet. So I needed some time, but we all knew that Be Alright was the hit. Like all of us, like it was a weird thing where, you know, I've never had this since. I've never had this apart from that one time where everyone at every label thinks that a song is a hit, and it actually is. Ever since Be Alright, every song I'm going to release, I have the label in Germany saying, it's not the right one, we want this one. And you have America saying, we want this one. It's all split, you know what I mean, between. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting thing. But yeah, I put Waves out, then it got synced in a show called Riverdale.
Oh yeah, that's a massive show.
Massive show, and it was the mid-season finale, so it got on a great moment. And then it went like huge. Like it went, well, for me it was huge. It went like, you know, a million views in a week. It was like, what the hell? And then I'm getting offers from like going to Germany, I'm getting on German radio, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And then and then I put out Be Alright, and then that just went to another level, basically. It just went crazy.
Wow. Was that kind of hard to, I mean, obviously you were working at it for a long time and working your ass off, but then to see something like the two songs that you knew were good, right? Like Waves, it does something. You're like, oh my gosh. And then Be Alright, the one that you knew also from the start that was going to, should have been a hit or was going to be a hit.
Yeah.
Like was it hard to kind of absorb everything, or was it moving pretty quick? Were you like, oh my, like, were you able to kind of take it in, or was it just moving so fast at that point?
It moves so fast. It is crazy because, you know, I moved in with my grandma, right? Like I was living with my nan for a year. I had no money. I was actually going to go, I don't talk about this. My previous job, I was so bad with my money that I was actually considering going bankrupt. Like I actually went into possibly go, cause I had all this tax I had to pay. Like I was so stressed. I was living with nan to save money, and then it just blew up. And I'm like, oh my God, my life's changing. I don't have to go bankrupt anymore. And I'm traveling across America. All my shows are selling out, and I'm selling out everywhere all around the world. And I'm getting taken to different countries. And it was a real crazy thing because it was like Waves was a big song, but it was not. There's so many levels to this stuff, is what I realized. Like you can have a hit, but you can have like an evergreen. And it was enormous. Like it was just, the streams went crazy and the shows were selling out. And there was a lot of pressure. But you have this thing where you sort of start to think that every song's going to be a hit. Like you sort of start to think, every song's a hit and this is the way it is. Like, and then things get a bit interesting because, you know, I never really got the ego because I started quite late. I was 26 when I got signed. So, or 27, I was like, you know, I'd lived a life of like a normal guy, you know? Right. So I didn't start to think I was the man, but I started to think, all right, well, oh, everything I put out is great. All right. So I think I did make some mistakes after Be Alright, in the sense that the songs I put out, although I love every song I put out, I think that it's good, but I don't think I had the follow-up. But I thought I did because everything I was putting out was doing really well. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of lessons in that, and something that I'm actually trying. I think about right now as I have another song that's done really well. The follow-up is so important, and you learn those lessons. And sometimes you never have another chance to do it right. But I think, that's where my head's at right now, actually. But I put out some other song. Yeah.
I was gonna say, but you were able to do that going into like, yeah, The Hardest Love. It was probably similar to what you were thinking. Like, okay, well, I just had this album that was awesome. Are we gonna be able to continue the uptick? And then obviously with How Do I Say Goodbye, it just went again.
It went crazy. Yeah, but in between that there was COVID. So, I was lucky because, when I finished that first album with BRI blowing up, I toured the world. And then as I went to take 6 months off, that's when COVID hit. So it kind of extended it. There's a lot of artists that had a big song 2 years ago that couldn't tour. They didn't, like, they had a hit song and they never heard a crowd sing it back to them. And
right. So I was wondering if Lizzo was going to have that, to be honest. Cause she had those, that, I mean, Truth Hurts was like the peak. And then it was like, everything shut down. I'm like, she's going to be able to have a career off this. Obviously.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, she did. She's crushing. You're right though. But that's, it was a weird time. And so not releasing music, I didn't release a lot of music. I think everyone was trying to wait for it to end. Like, and I don't know if you remember, but everyone was always like, it's 2 months away. It's going to be over.
Weeks.
And it just,
yeah. Flatten the curve.
And so when I put out, I put out a couple of songs from the new album and they weren't really doing that well. Like, I just come off a song that had a couple of billion streams and the songs were like, they were kind of getting like 100 million across everything, which is incredible. But like, I think when you have these different estimates and you start hearing things about like, I had conversations, they're saying, well, we can't spend as much money on your stuff anymore. Like, you also start to notice people who were there when you're hot, they're gone. They're gone now. Like, no one's returning the calls, literally. Like, but you have these people, you realize who your real crew and who your real friends, my manager stayed and all these people, but it was definitely a hard time. And it was, so things just not working. And then How Do I Say Goodbye comes out. And I knew that was my best song because when I wrote the song, I got really emotional listening to it. And I was like, when I'm writing songs, I'm so analytical about it. Like, I'm constantly stressing, is it good enough? How can I make it better? And so the emotion of the song doesn't really hit me until later, but I heard the chorus back the first time I wrote it. And I was like crying, so not like me. I was like, what the hell's going on? Cause it was it was so overwhelming. And I was like, all right, if that's making me cry, that's going to make, I knew what it was going to do. Weirdly. Yeah. The only two times I knew a song was going to connect was that and Be Alright. But you still, after the songs hadn't connected and nothing was working, I was like, oh, I don't know anymore. Have I missed my moment? Was that the moment and it's all gone past? And then put How Do I Say Goodbye out, started doing well. And then I posted a video of my dad. My brother filmed my dad listening to it for the first time on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And it got 40 million views in like a week. And then it went from like 500,000 streams a day to like 1.2 in 24 hours. And it got into the global 200. And I'm like, oh, because, I'm pre-TikTok on my success. And so right. I was a big learning curve of going, all right, well, you're posting every day and I really think about it, man. Like, you got to think about it with TikTok now. It's so many artists I talk to are so burnt out from it. But like, I really thought about it, and I think that if you think about it, and you try, you can still have success. And it is a great tool because there's less gatekeepers. Because How Do I Say Goodbye blew up without any gatekeepers? Like, no one supported that song out of the gates. It was like just out, and then. Like, the modern world now is you make it happen. You got to make it happen. That's what my label said. Like, they were like, all right, we got to get a trend. You got to get a trend going, we got a trend going. And then all of a sudden you get the fuel poured on it, which is great. And you need that. But it's a tough world out there now, man. It's much more do it yourself, make it happen. And then if you're lucky, then you get the support. Right. And the fuel put upon it. It's very different now.
Well, yeah, because now the everything can be literally analyzed. And do people care yet? Like, it's like with, especially with TikTok, it's almost like an open focus group, right? It's like,
yeah,
does
exactly.
anyone care yet? Exactly. Okay, now people
exactly.
care. But I feel like with, I mean, how do I say goodbye is such an amazing song, but such a personal song to you, but it touches so many other people. Like I said earlier, like, my father and I had cancer, and I'm like, wow, like, it just brings all those emotions right back. But with TikTok too, I feel like the things that work are the things that are authentic, and you could tell how authentic the song is. And then just the reaction of your dad on that thing is just like heartbreaking. because yes. you know he's here, you know, it's the whole emotion of everything is just so like, it just captures people. And it, and especially people that have the millions upon millions of people that have had that similar situation, you know, having,
yeah, and we all will, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. And
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you, I think you said in one of your posts or something about, you know, you were kind of even worried, not worried, but like, you know, should I put this song out? Cause it is so personal.
Yeah. I was worried about that. But one thing I learned really early on, I put a song out called Half a Man, which had a line in there, which was, how am I supposed to love you when I don't love who I am? And I remember when I put that song out, I was like, oh my God, is this too much to say? Like, how can I even say this? Like, I was just kind of, it was very open and emotional and vulnerable, and people loved it. So now when I have something that's emotional and vulnerable and authentic, and all the songs that are connected for me, I've got five of them that have connected in a big way. They've all been really genuinely authentic. Mm-hmm. The problem now is, you even said it before, like TikTok is a focus group, but it's really a focus group of who's the best marketer. You know what I mean? Because, and it's like, it's tough because it's not, you can write the best song in the world. Like I could write Be All Right Today and it never came out and I released it today. And if it didn't catch a trend, people would actually say, oh, we've got to move on to the next one. What's the next song? What do you got? And it's like, that is insane to me. That's mm-hmm. crazy. But on the other hand, you can actually have an exponential growth of a song and a fan base overnight if you think about it just as much. So it's a different time, but you just have to embrace the way that it is at the time. Maybe in a year's time, everyone will like, it'll equal out a bit and people, there'll be like TikTok trend songs and songs that are just really good. That can just be, that can grow without that on their own merit. But I just think right now, the rules of where we are as artists and how we have to get our songs out there is you make it happen on TikTok or the song is dead. That's the way, that's the way that it's sold to you now. And it kind of is the truth, and it's terrifying and exciting at the same time. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I have been out of radio for a few years now, like since kind of the beginning of the pandemic. But it's interesting to see, and like, because I still have a lot of friends that work and they program stations, and what they're putting into now, they're adding to their playlists are like all songs that have already done something right on TikTok. Like now yes. it's like people are taking like the trend, the viral songs, and it's like, okay, well, now I guess we can play it on the radio because 18 million other people have already like, and
exactly
co-signed to it. It's like, I feel like radio is always a little late to the party, and
yeah.
Now they're that's using interesting. That as like a way to kind of grab songs.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. And you know, and I'm someone who's benefited from that recently with How to Say Goodbye being so big on TikTok. But you know, you scale the mountain, right, once. And then right. you go, when you get, and then this, when the song sort of does its thing, it's terrifying to look out and go, oh, there's another one. And you go, wait, how do, like, that was almost like lightning striking in every facet of the song, the timing, how it blew up, and then going, oh, you got to do that again. And I think even there was a, I think even Ed Sheeran said this now, like the playing field's been so leveled now. It's not like you see huge artists that have 50 million month listeners putting a song out that just doesn't work. And I think we've never seen that. We've never seen that before. Like everyone has to, it sort of leveled it. And it also means that like an artist who's brand new can finally just put a song out and it can blow up. And I think so it's leveling the playing field, but making it incredibly stressful for everyone. So that's how it feels, you know.
Yeah, because I'm sure a lot of massive artists that have, you know, had a huge, you know, following or monthly listeners or whatever, assume like, oh, well, I'm putting a song out, so I know every radio yeah. station in the planet's going to start playing, and it's like, well, exactly. not if it's not a hit anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, I bet those people are like, I mean, a part of me is like, oh man, like, a part of me is like, the old world is good in some ways and horrible in others, because you go, it always was given a sort of. It was given, it just was pushed through the gates a little bit. But now it's like the gates are kind of like open for anyone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's also harder to get through them almost. I don't know. It's such a, it's so, even as I'm talking about it, it's so conflicting and confusing, contradictory. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I love the new album and what you're doing, and you have this massive tour coming up too. I'm sure you're pretty excited about that.
Yes. Very excited. Like, I can't believe it, man. Like, yeah, like the tours I'm doing, especially in Europe, it's like in Canada, the great shows. But like in Australia and Europe, I'm doing like arenas and, you know, they're selling out. And I've been wanting to get to this point my whole life. And I always wondered, as I saw so many other artists get, they go up and up, and I was stalling. And I was like, I feel like I'm finally, I'm here, man. And I feel great about it. And in America, I'm doing theaters. And I think it's just such a difficult place to get through as America. It's just so big. But I think I'm really excited about this tour, and I think it's going to sell out, the American one, which we're announcing soon. So I'm really excited about it.
Oh, amazing! I was going to say, I didn't see any U.S. dates on your tour.
It's coming.
Soon. Actually, I'm in Nashville now, but I'm originally from San Diego, and you played House of Blues, I believe, last time you came. At least when I saw you. Yeah, with Billy Raffel.
Was that Forest Black?
I think it was.
We had to cancel. There was something. The only show we canceled in the last tour was the Nashville one.
I'm talking about San Diego. It was in San Diego. It was before I moved to Nashville.
Okay, sorry, we did San Diego. I think that was with Forest Black opening for me.
Okay,
it would have been Forest.
Oh, it was Forest Black. Sorry. Yeah.
I got it. And that's right. And our drummer had COVID, I think, and we had to do it solo acoustic with a duo set. It was really that was a good show though. It was fun. Okay. But. But I actually live in Nashville as well, technically. Now I've got a place out there.
Oh, no way.
So in 12 South. Yeah, I've got a place there. I'm not really ever there. I sort of rent it out, but that's kind of where I'm based, I guess, if you could say I'm based anywhere.
Oh, that's amazing. So, well,
yeah. Where do you live in Nashville?
I live down by Franklin.
Oh, great, man. Yeah. Great. It's a great spot.
Cool that I didn't realize. I figured that you set up home base either in LA or Australia still in Sydney.
Yeah, you know how it is. It's sort of like it's there, but I'm never there. You know what it's
sure,
like.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you do a lot of songwriting here? I'm just curious.
I do. Yeah, I wrote "How Do I Say Goodbye" in Nashville at my friend John Hume's house. He's a Kiwi. He's a New Zealander, and he lives in he got me when I went and saw his house. I was like, this is incredible. Like this, what the hell is this place? And like, it was just. It's so exciting in Nashville, the feeling it's growing. I'm sure you've seen it grow last few years. It's just
I've only been here for 2 years and it's insane to see.
Oh, so you're like me. We're hanger oners of the Nashville trend.
Yeah, exactly. I'm one of the millions. Every time I told somebody I moved here, like, oh, another person from California. I'm like,
Yeah. But in a few years, we're going to be like OGs, man. We're going to be like the originals, you know? Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dean, for doing this, man. I appreciate it. I know you've had a busy day, and that's incredible. You're in Nashville. Maybe we can link up sometime when you're back in town. But I have one more quick question for you before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Absolutely. Okay. So I was always quite good at this. I'm bad at a lot of things, but I was good at following this advice. But at times in my life, I have faltered a little bit on this, and I've recently rediscovered it. When you start out, people will tell you to do things and to go in certain directions that are against your natural instincts or what you want to do. I think it's really important to listen to people around you, and I'm really good on that. But you have to have a north pole you're heading in. You have to find your sound, and take some time before you find the song you want to put out. I took years before I put out my best song, Waves. Although with TikTok, you know, it's a bit different now. But my advice is this. It would be, don't fail on someone else's terms. People will look you in the eye who have very high-powered jobs, high-level jobs, and they will tell you what you should do, and you will fail on their terms. And if it doesn't work – sorry, I lost my train of thought. So let me start that again. Sorry. So, okay. Don't listen to – everyone's going to give you certain opinions and what you should do, but when it doesn't work – they won't be there, and they're never there to kind of, it'll just kind of end. They just kind of disappear. Follow your instincts and do what you want to do. And when you start having success in that, continue it, because people are always going to want to keep pushing you in different directions, and they don't know what they're doing. No one really knows what they're doing. Some people are good at things. Some people are like very good, but no one really knows all the answers. And fail on your own terms rather than failing on someone else's, because that's kind of hell. I don't think anyone, a lot of people do deal with it, but I don't think anyone wants to deal with. So find your own way in things, and don't just listen to everyone blindly. Take everyone's advice in, but you know, no one really knows. So that's what I'll say.